हरि ओम तत्सत श्री गुरुभ्यो नमः हरि ओम 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 श्री परमात्मने नमः मूकं करोति वाचालं पंगुं लंघयते गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे परमानन्दमाधवम् यं ब्रह्मा वरुणेन्द्ररुद्रमरुतः स्तुन्वन्ति दिव्यैस्तवैः वेदैस्साङ्गपदक्रमोपनिषदैः गायन्ति यं सामगाः ध्यानावस्थिततद्गतेन मनसा पश्यन्ति यं योगिनो यस्यान्तं न विदुःसुरासुरगणाः देवाय तस्मै नमः ॐ श्री परमात्मने नमः ध्यानयोगो नाम षष्टोऽध्यायः श्रीभगवानुवाच अनाश्रितः कर्मफलम् कार्यम् कर्म करोति यः ससन्न्यासी च योगी च न निरग्निर्न चाक्रियः यम् सन्न्यासमिति प्राहुः योगम् तम् विद्धि पाण्डव न ह्यसन्न्यस्तसङ्कल्पः योगी भवति कश्चन आरुरुक्षोर्मुनेर्योगम् कर्मकारणमुच्यते योगारूढस्य तस्यैव शमः कारणमुच्यते यदा हिनेन्द्रियार्थेषु न कर्मस्वनुषज्जते सर्वसङ्कल्पसन्न्यासी योगारूढस्तदोच्यते उद्धरेदात्मनात्मानम् नात्मानमवसादयेत् आत्मैव ह्यात्मनो बन्धुः आत्मैव रिपुरात्मनः बन्धुरात्मात्मनस्तस्य येनात्मैवात्मना जितः अनात्मनस्तु शत्रुत्वे वर्तेतात्मैव शत्रुवत् जितात्मनः प्रशान्तस्य परमात्मा समाहितः शीतोष्णसुखदुःखेषु तथा मानापमानयोः ज्ञानविज्ञानतृप्तात्मा कूटस्थो विजितेन्द्रियः युक्त इत्युच्यते योगी समलोष्टाश्मकाञ्चनः सुहृन्मित्रार्युदासीन मध्यस्थद्वेषबन्धुषु साधुष्वपि च पापेषु समबुद्धिर्विशिष्यते योगी युञ्जीत सततम् आत्मानम् रहसि स्थितः एकाकीयत चित्तात्मा निराशीरपरिग्रहः जनरली सम वेदांतिक टेक्स्ट्स से that one has to be qualified for knowledge, and they also prescribe what are the qualifications required for accomplishing the knowledge. The qualifications required for the knowledge are unexplained, but those texts do not teach how to become qualified. It's like if you want to enter into the university and to do a given course, the university prescribes you must have this qualification to enter into this university to do this course. But the university does not tell you how you should have be, you can become qualified, get yourself qualified. Which means you must have already known how to become qualified, where to go and what to study, how to become qualified. Then you get yourself qualified, then go to the university. Similarly, many Vedantic texts only prescribe these are the qualifications required for the seeker of truth, one who aspires for the knowledge of the truth. But they do not say how to become qualified. The greatness of Bhagavad Gita is repeatedly, all over, everywhere, Bhagavad Gita teaches how to become qualified for knowledge. How to get oneself equipped, prepared for knowledge. And mainly, repeatedly, in different ways, the Karma Yoga, Bhagavad Gita teaches, living emphasizes a life of Karma Yoga. Living a life of Karma Yoga is the only means of preparing one's mind for knowledge in terms of mental purity required for knowledge. Therefore, and especially when we understand very clearly, knowledge has to be accomplished only through the study shravanam. We understand very problem. Ignorance of the truth, in terms of ignorance of the self, is the root cause of all our problems we are going through in life. The root cause of all our problems is actually ignorance of the reality, in terms of ignorance of the truth of one's own self. So, Atma Jnanam Samsara Karanam, we know very well. We come to know because through the study of the Shastram, because of our exposure to this Shastram. That's good. Therefore, now knowing, so for us to free ourselves from all our problems in life, the freedom from these problems from life for good is accomplishable only through the knowledge of the truth. Therefore, knowledge of the truth in terms of self-knowledge. And we also know the self-knowledge, how to accomplish the self-knowledge. There is no way of attaining the knowledge of the truth or knowledge of the self other than studying the Shastram. Because what we need is Pramana has to work. What choice do you have to see a given, to see the object called light? What choice do you have other than using your eyes? Similarly, for the eyes to see themselves also, what choice do the eyes have other than using the mirror to see their reflection? If the eyes have to see, they have to see their own reflection. And for the eyes to be able to see their reflection, to know, to look at their own, how they look, eyes have no choice other than using the mirror. Similarly here, for one to know the truth, to know the truth of oneself, Shastram is the only means of knowledge, means Shastram has to be studied. That's why I said Shravanam, Shravanam. Shastra, study. So with the Shraddha, having faith in the unflinching faith in the words of the Shastram, the total commitment to the study of the Shastram, and studying the Shastram under the guidance of a competent teacher for a length of time regularly, systematically is called Shravanam. The Shravanam alone will result in the removal of ignorance. Knowledge is only through Shastra Shravanam. There's no, because what is that which will remove your ignorance? Shastra study alone, Shravanam alone, understand what Shravanam means, and the Shravanam, listening to the study of, listening to the unfoldment of the words of the Shastram alone, in due course of time, when it is done regularly, systematically, properly, with the help of the teacher, that alone will remove the ignorance. Why I am repeating so many times? Attain the knowledge. For that knowledge, even to sit and listen to the teacher, to be receptive in the class, to be able to focus in the teaching, to understand the grasp also, you must be mentally relieved. You must be mentally, disturbance-free person. Therefore, for that to have the relative freedom from mental disturbances, to be able to focus on the Shastra study also, before the Shastra study also, there is Upasanam practiced, meditation practiced. And then later on, after the study of the Shastram, also you are going to do meditation. Isn't it? For meditation is not for the attainment of knowledge. Understand? Meditation is only for ascertainment of the fact which you already understood through Shravanam. For assimilation of the teaching which you already got through Shravanam. Which means meditation is a mental activity which will not remove the ignorance, which is only done for assimilation of the teaching or ascertainment of the understanding of the fact which you have got through Shravanam. Understand? Which means meditation is a sadhanam, is a means for the mental purification, relative purification before the study of the Shastram. And meditation is also for what? Mental purification after the study of the Shastram. After the attainment of knowledge also, you study Shastram for mental purification. Before the study of the Shastram also, you practice meditation for mental purification. Shastra meditation is only for mental purification, not for the attainment of knowledge. Understand? Therefore, if meditation is important, without meditation, knowledge cannot be, knowledge attained through the study cannot be assimilated, ascertained. Without having relative purity also, very study itself will be difficult. Therefore, taking care of one's mental purity and mental steadiness in order to be able to study properly, in order to be able to understand, in order to be able to ascertain, meditation is important. But if the meditation has to be efficacious, the meditation has to be effective, it has to give you the benefit of, the very purpose of meditation has to serve, means one must be, take care of certain, prerequisite things. And that is why Krishna says, the disturbed, agitated, restless minded person can never be qualified for meditation. First thing, and second thing, our life is definitely Life is full of experiences, and the experiences will always result in the interaction with the world. Experiences of the situations definitely will give rise to accumulation of negative emotions in the mind, positive and negative emotions. Okay, all those emotions, definitely they leave their imprints, the vasanas, and they remain accumulated in our subconscious. We do not know how much it is dormant and latent in our subconscious, and they will definitely surface whenever they have opportunity to be triggered, whenever the situations trigger, and they will rise, they'll surface, and they can agitate the mind. So meditation will be a big impediment for meditation. Therefore, it is very important for any meditator to maintain this mental equipoise, for which one needs to definitely learn, understand what it means by saying living a life of karma yoga. Then one has to live a life of karma yoga. Therefore, Krishna begins the chapter emphasizing the importance of karma yoga, praising the karma yogi, and he also talks about the bahiranga sadhanani, the general disciplines which need to be followed always in our day-to-day life. And we saw those general disciplines later on, and there are certain things which have to take care of before the meditation, and they are called antaranga sadhanani, or specific, disciplines, or specifically things we have to take care of before we meditate. And Krishna is going to discuss them in all these verses from 10th to the 15th, all these verses, which we started seeing yesterday. And I said like that, the place where we should sit and meditate, the time when we should meditate, and the posture that we should maintain, we should have, and also how important it is for us to have certain mastery over senses, and how we have to withdraw our attention of the mind from other things, so like indriya nigraha, mano nigraha, and also how important it is to maintain our, even the breathing, rhythmic breathing, and like that. Finally, we also saw that first of all, we should be convinced of the efficacy of meditation, that meditation will help me in ascertaining the truth, in ascertaining the fact which I understand through Shastra. Okay? These are the things which we saw, and yesterday we were seeing what I have already said. We are going to see in these verses. Yogi satatam yunjita. The word yogi here means meditator. All yogi hatatam yunjita means, may the meditator, yunjita means may one focus, fix his mind, fix the attention of his mind, focus his attention of the mind. Now atmanam yunjita means may the meditator focus the attention of his mind. Which means, may the meditator meditate. Not once in a while, when he practices meditation, may he meditate regularly. Because regularity in following any discipline alone will make the practice effective. Yunjita. And where should he sit here? He says, rahasisthitaha. Remaining in a secluded, disturbance-free, uncrowded, non-crowded place, ekaki, by himself, all alone, he should sit. And when he sits, definitely, how should he be? Yata chitta atma. Yata implies what? Disciplined. Having his mind and body disciplined. Isn't it? Which means definitely he takes care of. That means the physical body or his mind, you know, are no more disturbance for him. He has disciplined them that he can sit quietly for meditation. Then, nirashihi, I explained already yesterday, nirashihi being free from the desires. Because it is not possible for one to undo desires, suppress, oppress, destroy desires is not possible. And having desires is very, very natural, isn't it? How can one be a desireless person? Nirashihi means not being disturbed by his own binding, anxiety causing likes and dislikes. Okay, that's what nirashihi, which means he is free from anxiety. Therefore, his desires are there in him, but there is he's not anxious about anything to be accomplished. Therefore, he is free from the binding, anxiety causing desires. Nirashihi. Then aparigraha. So aparigraha means it is impossible for one to be physically non-possessive. We do possess things, even a sannyasi, at least something must be there, isn't it? Physically cannot be absolutely non-possessive. Here aparigraha means entertaining the sense of freedom from possessiveness. Freeing oneself from the sense of possession, which means understanding the fact, really speaking, by Bhagavan's grace, I am blessed with all these things. Maybe my own punyam has blessed me with all these things. And Bhagavan's grace, so everything I am enjoying is Bhagavan's gift to me, given to me. Therefore, this life is not permanent here. All these possessions, the so-called possessions, which I think I'm owning, really speaking, given to me as a result of my punyam by Bhagavan in the form of law and order, ordained by Bhagavan. If I remember this, I will think I'm only here to enjoy them, to manage them, not to own them. This understanding is what? Being free from sense of possession. Why? Because that being free from sense of possession, understanding the fact, I'm only given, everything is given to me to enjoy and to manage, maintain, not to own. Isn't it? If you understand this fact, the sense of possession will, freeing oneself from sense of possession also will contribute for mental calmness. Because the more we possess, the more we need to pay attention to maintain. The more we pay attention to maintain, the more we will be agitated. So Krishna does not say don't possess things. Don't entertain the sense of possession. If we understand, we will know how true it is, how foolish it is, how ridiculous and absurd it is to entertain this, sense of possession. I own these things. I have these things. Therefore, because anything which will contribute for mental disturbance should be taken care of. That is what Krishna means here, okay? Okay, aparigraha. In between he goes. Now again he talks about the place. Rahasi, first he said, the place must be secluded. Then now he says, shuchau deshe pratishthapya. Shuchau deshe pratishthapya. स्थिरमासनमात्मनः स्थिरमासनमात्मनः नात्युच्छ्रितं नातिनीचम् नात्युच्छ्रितं नातिनीचम् चैलाजिनकुशोत्तरम् कुशोत्तरम् नौ शुचौ देशे प्रतिष्ठाप्य स्थिरम् आसनम् आत्मनः सो आसनम् प्रतिष्ठाप्य सो प्लेसिंग योर सीट एंड हाउ शुड इट बी हियर स्थिरम् इट मस्ट बी फर्म अनमूविंग बिकॉज इट्स नॉट अगेन द मूवमेंट ऑफ द सीट ऑल्सो विल कॉज एजिटेशंस And where should we sit and meditate? Shuchau deshe, in a clean place. Yesterday itself I told you, clean place implies it is tidy and clean. It is not dirty and dusty. Not only that, it also the place where the things existing in the place do not contribute for your mental agitations. They do not provoke your unwanted, unnecessary thoughts. So, you see, already our mind, already we are so disturbed, agitated, our attention is so scattered all over. So, if you have things, even people, sometimes very important to keep away also. Don't need to, without any hatred. Association of people, association of things, association of anything which will remind you of, which will provoke your unwanted thinking, thoughts, they all should not be there in the place. That's what he means by saying that place must be connective, this place must be clean enough to connect you to things associated with the Shastram. Encouraging and recommending for meditation. So he says, Shuchau deshe asanam atmanaha asanam sthiram asanam pratishtapya. And that asanam, how should it be? Na atyuchritam. It should not be too high. Like Hanuman had a seat made of his own, all winding up his big tail. He made a big seat and jumped and sat on that big seat in front of Ravana. I don't know whether you remember the Hanuman Ramayanam. Na atyuchritam, not a seat which is too high. Na ati nicham, which is not too low also. Then the seat can be what? Chaila ajina kusha uttaram. So, chaila ajina kusha uttaram. So, kusha grass, as I said, you can have, they used to spread the kusha grass. And this those days, okay? Or nowadays you get the kusha. Kusha grass also called darbha grass. And the mat made of kusha grass nowadays available. And on the top you can have a deer skin. And on the top of it you can have a smooth thin layer of the cotton. So you have a seat made of three layers having kusha grass, then a layer of deer skin, and on the top we have this cloth spread. So we don't need to literally take the Bhagavad Gita. In Bhagavad Gita Krishna says I have to have this seat, a three layered seat having kusha grass underneath. On the top, I should have the deer skin. On above all, I have a cotton cloth spread. Where can I find such a three-layered seat made of these three things? Don't go in search of it. We have to understand the spirit behind that. That we should not be too high, too low. It should be too hard, too rough, too harsh. Too pricky also. It must be soft enough where you can, you won't be disturbed. You can sit comfortably. It's not too comfortable. It's not too disturbing. Uncomfortable also. See, it is a clean seat. That's what he means by that. As I told you, the kusha grass the edge being sharp edge, it's always connected to sharpness of the intellect also. Something they talk about as auspicious, don't ask me why, how and all that. But somehow in Vedic tradition, the Kushagras has been always considered to be something sacred. The Kushagras has been, maybe it must have been available also those days. Okay, so he says that. Then, okay, you know, seat is, you have talked about the seat. Now, tatraika grammanah kritva, tatraika grammanah kritva, yata chittendriya kriyaha, yata chittendriya kriyaha, upavishyasane yunjat, shyasane yunjat, Yogamatma Vishuddhaye. Okay. He says again, Tatra Manaha Ekagram Kritva. Very, very important prerequisite discipline to be taken care of before, just before meditation. Ekagram manaha kritva. Agram, eka agram means single pointed. Eka agram. See, when the mind is with all the senses, when the senses are with their objects, attention of the mind is scattered. Isn't it? Therefore, before meditation, Yata chitta indriya kriyaha. So you free yourself from the physical activities. When you are doing anything physically, you must do it attentively. Your mind must be 100% in your physical activity also. Your mind must be 100% in your oral activity is also, you must do it attentively, not mechanically, consciously, attentively, no, placing attention there, you should do your physical, mental, oral activities. But when it is exclusively mental activity, you are not expected to not be doing any physical activity. Understand? In manasam karma, physical activity should not be there. No, I'm meditating, I'm doing something else also. No, that is not possible. Therefore here, yata chitta indriya kriya means freeing yourself from physical activities, physically remaining actionless, physically not doing any externally any not doing any physical activity. Yata chitta indriya kriyaha. Here is what indriya nigraha, I told you. No, first you turn your senses from away from their objects. How can you turn your senses away from their objects? No, by withdrawing your attention of the mind, withdrawing your mental attention from the sense objects. You turn your attention of the senses from the objects. Which means you have now disciplined mind and senses. When my attention of the mind is withdrawn from the senses, the sense objects, you have turned your senses away from the sense objects, and now the attention of the mind is what? Converged, isn't it? The scattered attention is available as converged mental energy, focused. And he says, Ekagram Manaha Kritva. This is what? Converging your entire mental energy, converging the entire focus, attention of the mind, withdrawing this from the being scattered. Ekagram manaha kritva. Now, attention of the mind is available totally. Total attention of the mind is available together as one single pointed attention. Manaha krutva. Asane upavishya. Sitting in your, being seated, yunjat. Yunjat means, may the meditator fix his mind, focus his attention, that converged, focused attention of the mind, may he fix in the object of meditation. Yogam yunjat means may he fix his mind, may he place his focus of attention on the object of meditation. Attention has been withdrawn from everything and the focused attention, isn't it? Converged attention, which is free from diversion, okay, which is free from distraction, now together as one single pointed, may that attention be now focused on the object of meditation. Is it clear? Yogam yunjyat. For what? Immediately Krishna says, it is a very important Atma Vishuddhaye. May the meditator meditate for mental purity. Atma Vishuddhi means, see, it not the actual Atma, the consciousness. Here Atma means the mind. Consciousness does not require any purification. And understand, here Atma implies what? The mind. Atma Vishuddhaye. Therefore, please understand, go and tell anybody boldly, meditation is not for the attainment of knowledge. Meditation will not remove your ignorance. Meditation is not to attain knowledge. Meditation is only for mental purification. Atma Vishuddhaye Dhyanam. Yogam Yunjad Atma Vishuddhaye. Repeat sentence. Yogam Yunjad. Okay. May one focus his attention of the mind on, total attention of the mind on the object of meditation. For what? Atma Vishuddhaye. For mental purification, not for knowledge. So before the Shastra study, before the attainment of knowledge, when you practice meditation, your object of meditation is Ishvara, Sagunam Brahma, then that meditation is for mental purity, now for managing your thoughts and for mental steadiness, antahkarana naischalyam. Upasanam is for antahkarana naischalyam. The highly restless, agitated, disturbed mind, to calm and quieten the mind, to make it relatively calm, the meditation is a means. After the study of the Shastram, after the attainment of the knowledge through the study of the Shastram, meditation is, even then, meditation is for the remove, understand, for the purification of the mind, because the impurities, before jnanam, to resolve the impurities in terms of anger, hatred, etc., meditation is practiced. After knowledge, Also what? There is error. After the attainment of knowledge, also I am not the body, I am not the mind, I am the consciousness. Even after attaining the knowledge also, there is still error caused by what? Habitual errors. Now the habitual error is called a viparita bhavana or vipariyayaha. The habitual error will be there due to the long orientation. Then what? It is viparita bhavana means what? It is deha abhimana, identity with the body, one's own self-identity with the body, self-identity with the mind, self-identity with the body, maintenance complex has been there for many janmas, has been there for so many years in this life also. Therefore, it is law orientation, because due to the long orientation, this I am the body, maintenance complex, this notion being so rooted, so entrenched in the mind, even after knowing also, because of the habit, orientation, there will be viparita bhavana. It's called habitual error. Error not because, error caused by ignorance is what? Error caused by ignorance is there before the study of the shastram, before the attainment of the knowledge. After the study of the shastram, after attaining knowledge also, still error is there in perception. Means this error is not caused by ignorance, it is caused by habit. Viparita bhavana. Wrong. Why? Because entrenched notion which has been there. So for resolving that error caused by the habit also, you need contemplation. Isn't it? That's also what? Mental activity. Therefore, before the knowledge also, you practice meditation for relative purity, relative steadiness. After the meditation also, after the attainment of knowledge also, the meditation is for absolute purity, absolute steadiness, in terms of ascertainment of the understanding of the fact you have gained through this study. Is it clear? So Shastram does not say meditation is for the attainment of knowledge. No. Meditation is for mental purification. Atma Vishuddhaye Yogam Yunjita. Is it clear? We'll see it again later on. Okay. In fact, I told you many times before this Pujya Swamiji's example. He always tells the story of a rich man, a poor man, a beggar. Pujya Swamiji's very old story this is. I never feel tired of telling it how many ever times. Swamiji always enjoys because he repeats things, but he gives vision every time he speaks. He can take you around all over, and the Swamiji nobody can wear Swamiji's shoes. He has his own way of taking you around and beating around the bush and finally giving you the vision. That is Pujya Swamiji's uniqueness. He's a unique teacher. Anyway, he gives his example. There is a beggar sitting in front of the temple. In India, in the front of temples, these beggars sit. And then the devotees who go to the temple, and they always think, giving some money, coins to the beggar, giving some food, they can gain some punyam, because they go to the temple also to pray to Bhagavan. So they give money and go. Like this, beggars are sitting, and this beggar takes the money, and one beggar goes and buys a lottery ticket. And what happens? And he wins the lottery. He wins the lottery and he becomes overnight a millionaire. A very, very rich man. And the minute he becomes a big richest man, suddenly he becomes rich. And the whole life he has been living a beggar, life of a beggar. And he becomes a very rich man, he can't handle it immediately. And he next day, he comes to the same temple in a very big car and being driven by a driver. And the driver comes and opens the car door and he comes down and he comes and with because a new rich man, so he is wearing the rings, all the ten fingers. And then he comes in nice silk dress and all that and he goes. And as he was walking towards the temple, he sees some other devotee who came to the temple was distributing laddus. Some Swamiji gives the story, okay? Laddus for all other poor people. And all the beggars were crowding together and asking, stretching their hands like this, asking for laddu. And this beggar, when he got out, not beggar anymore, okay? The rich man. No more a beggar, okay? The rich man got out of the car. He was walking towards the temple. He saw some crowd standing there. And one man was distributing some food. And all the beggars around were, stretching their hand, asking for food. This man saw somebody distributing some laddu. Immediately, he ran towards that person. And he also, like one of the beggars, raised his hand, asked for me, he asked. And it was really, that man was certainly surprised to see him. My God, look at the way the man looks very rich. He's gorgeously dressed and he is wearing all rings in all his fingers. And he's also coming and asking for, laddu. Why did he do? Even though the food was distributed for the rich, the poor beggars who were sitting, this man is a rich man, but still he ran. He just forgot he is rich. Is he rich or poor? He is rich. Does he know he is rich or not? He knows he is rich. He knows he is rich, but he forgot the fact that he is not beggar. He remembers he is rich. He is rich. He remembers, he knows he is rich, but what he forgot? He forgot he is no more a beggar. Why he forget? Why did he forget? Because he has been begging for so many years throughout his life, and suddenly when he became rich, the habit of going and asking all the time, asking for, stretching the hand in front of others, habit of age-old habit of begging, he is still entrenched in him that I am rich, he knows. In spite of knowing I am rich, he forgot the fact that he is no more a beggar. This forgetfulness of the fact that he is no more a beggar is due to his old habit of begging for many years. Understand? And on his way back, he was sitting in the car and he felt very ashamed. Gee, I shouldn't have done that. Why? I also ran like others. And, then what should I do now? If next time when I come, I forget. Why I forget? What should I do not to forget? Not to forget the fact that I am not a beggar. I don't need to remember I am rich alone. I know I am rich. But I forget that I am not a beggar. Has to say, I am rich, not a beggar. I am rich, no more beggar. I am rich, I am no more beggar. You can't simply being a beggar, you can't simply say, I'm rich. You must be rich. You should know you are rich. then you should remember that you have forgotten the fact that you are no more a beggar. That you have to repeatedly remind yourself. How long should I be repeating to myself? All it is called dhyanam. I am not beggar anymore, dhyanam. Repeat, this is a fact. Okay? The fact which you forget should become an unforgettable fact, ever remembered fact, for which you need to repeatedly dwell upon the fact which you already know. That is called contemplation. Understand? You hear physically, you don't dance, oh, I am not rich. Just only mentally only, you don't sing, you don't dance, you don't do any other activity, no seva, nothing. Here, it's a mental activity. Remind yourself, remember again and again and again and again repeatedly. How long? Until it becomes an unforgettable fact. Understand? That is called Manasam Karma Nididhyasanam. That is what here, Nididhyasanam, the contemplation, repeatedly, Shastra study, Shravanam, has given you the knowledge. What knowledge you are given now? What knowledge you have got now? All that is here is only Brahma Chaitanyam, and I am Brahma Chaitanyam. Isn't it? I am the consciousness. I'm not just this, you know, tiny little, the body, mind, sense complex. I am the ever limitless consciousness. I am not just limited, time-bound body, mind, sense complex. Isn't it? This fact which you have understood. But all these years, you have been thinking what? I am the body. That notion is so, this is the, I know I am not, no more. I'm not a body. I'm consciousness. I know I'm consciousness because I have studied the Shastram. But what I forget here, I forget the fact which I have understood that I'm not the body. You're not ignorant of yourself being rich now. That big beggar is not ignorant of himself being rich. Similarly, you are not ignorant of yourself being consciousness because you have done the Shravanam. You know the swarupa of yourself being consciousness. You know you are consciousness. But what you forget is the fact that you are not the body, isn't it? Which you have understood. Therefore, this you have to repeatedly, therefore, I am consciousness. I am consciousness. I am consciousness. You don't mechanically say that. What you understood, the fact which is true to your understanding, you are repeating, you are dwelling upon constantly, continuously, consistently after understanding. Okay? Not without understanding, not some mechanical repetition, aham brahmasmi, aham brahmasmi. It is not mechanical repetition or blabbering. It is the repetition, it is the reminding yourself, dwelling upon the fact about yourself which you have really understood through Shastra study. And this is what is contemplation. In this contemplation, who is the one who is dwelling upon? You are the one who is dwelling upon. What are you dwelling upon? Your own nature. What is your nature? Your nature being consciousness. Because the object of meditation is yourself. And you are the meditator, therefore there is no division. Meditator, meditated, difference is not there. Division is not there. Because you are just reminding continuously, constantly of your own swarupam, be what it is. What are you dwelling upon? Not about anything else in the world. Not Ishvara, not any other object. Your own swarupam. Understand? Therefore, this is contemplation, this is manasam karma, this also, this meditation, which is contemplation, wherein meditator, meditated, difference is not there. This contemplation, which is done after the shravanam, after the attainment of knowledge, is for also what? mental purification to remove the impurity in the form of forgetfulness of the fact due to the old habit of having entrenched notion that I am the body. Understand? Therefore, meditation does not remove the ignorance. And one more thing. Before the study of the Shastram, also meditation is for what? We talk about Mala Vikshepa Nivrittihi, Nivrittaye. What is Malam? We are helpless. We do have impurities in terms of anger, jealousy, hatred, fear, binding desires, likes and dislikes. All these impurities are there. Why do we call them impurities? Because anything which causes discomfort is disease, a mental disease. Therefore, we call them malam, isn't it? So, this malam, malam has to be removed. And then vikshepaha means restlessness, agitation, isn't it? We cannot sit in one place, in one thing. We can't focus on one thing for length of time together. Sometimes people, you can see, they can't sit in one place quietly. They have to keep around, running around. Well, because it's all expression of mental restlessness. Therefore, this malam and vikshepa, they both have to, be disturbance for meditation. So before the Shastra study, before the attainment of knowledge, also you practice meditation. Then object of meditation is Sagunam Brahma. There meditation, the meditator meditated, the difference is there. There we call what? Mala Vikshepa Nivrittihi. This also for remove mental purification of the, in terms of removal of impurities, malam and vikshepaha, the agitation. And after the attainment of knowledge, after the study of the Shastram, attainment of knowledge, you practice meditation, which is contemplation, which is actually, it is not an action, it is being with the fact. Isn't it? Being with the fact, being seated with oneself is contemplation, which is for resolving the habitual error, which is another impurity. Therefore, Atma Vishuddhaye Dhyanam, meditation is only for mental purification, not for knowledge. Without studying the Shastram, with the help of, systematically, regularly, under the guidance of a teacher, how much ever you sit and practice meditation, your ignorance will not go even a tinge, okay? You will continue to be ignorant. Without meditation, you are non-meditative ignorant, and after meditation, while meditating, you are meditative ignorant. Understand? Which means it doesn't serve any purpose. Maybe it can help you to have some, help you have mental relaxation can give you, but it is not a permanent remedy, solution. Okay, he continues here. How should we sit? As I told you already, Krishna does not put all these steps, all these factors one has to observe before you sit for meditation. All these antaranga sadhanani, the specific disciplines, he does not put them together. Okay, he puts here and there. We have to understand correctly. Samam kaya shiro grivam samam kaya shiro grivam dharayanna chalam sthiraha dharayanna chalam sthiraha samprekshanasikagram swam dishaschanavalokayan samam kaya shiro grivam dharayan achalam sthiraha samprekshya nasikagram swam dishascha anavalokayan. Okay, he says samam kaya shiro grivam. When you sit, kayam means the trunk of the body. The part of the body from the hip to the neck is called trunk, which is kayam. Then shiraha, head. Griva, neck. So, griva, shiraha, kayam. Body, neck and head, keeping them in one straight line. Samam kritva. And achalam, so samam dharayan, keeping the body, the trunk of the body, neck and head in one straight line. Achalam, then without moving here and there, sthiraha, remain sitting firm. One should, because the posture is very, very important, not only for meditation, even otherwise, generally, whenever we sit, it is advised always to sit straight without any bends, because sitting straight contributes for your physical well-being in general. Why? Because only when you sit straight, even one can breathe properly, it seems. The prana samyam, when you sit straight, the lungs can expand and contract easily, so the breathing will be rhythmic, so it is good for your health. And second thing, in a sitting posture, otherwise also, you can avoid the back problem and all that when you sit. Sitting straight is very important. In fact, it contributes. Because if you don't sit straight, it seems, nowadays they have discovered this, when you sit with lots of bends or curves without sitting straight, it quickly causes discomfort to the body. And then they say that when it causes discomfort, means you become fatigued soon. And it results in inefficiency in your contribution. Isn't it? Therefore, even nowadays, how to make these people working in offices sit straight? So they're even working, there is a science nowadays, biotechnology something like bioengineering something, where they work on this, what sort of seats will be better for them so that they can sit straight, therefore they can contribute for more productivity. Isn't it? There is a science itself now. And then, anyway, so what I'm saying, it's very important to sit straight. That's what he says. So, sthiraha, remaining firm. Now he says, dishascha anavalokayan. Already he has mentioned, with turning away your senses from the sense objects through the withdrawal of the mind, attention of the mind from the senses. We've already seen that. Specifically he says, dishaha cha anavalokayan. So without looking all over, all around, which means See, the more we turn and see what is happening all over, it implies how restless we are. The more we turn and see here and there, the more our eyeballs roll here and there, it is expression of, it indication of how restless we are. Just by seeing the eyeballs of a person in conversation, you can make out it's worth talking to the person or not. The person sees here and there, not seeing your eyes to eye. You can understand the person is not interested in listening to what you are saying. Because attention is distracted somewhere. He is disturbed. He is not listening to you. Which means the eyeball movement can tell you how restless mentally the person is. And suppose somebody turns the head and sees all over, means you can understand, again, the person is very restless. Therefore, one of the specifically Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says here, Dishahacha Anavalokyan, without seeing here and there, all over, okay, better focus, see, you know, place your eyes on one thing. Anavalokayan, he says, Nasikagram Swam Sampreksya. Nasikagram means tip of the nose. And if you literally take the meaning of this verse, Nasika Agram Swam Sampreksya. Because Krishna tells in the very beginning, you sit in a secluded place where nobody comes, and Yekaki, he said. And when he also mentions that you may, you know, seeing the tip of the nose means definitely not somebody else's tip of the nose. And it's one's own tip of the nose also, literally we should not take it here. If you really take in the literal meaning of this sentence, and if you really try to see, okay, Krishna says don't see all over. Therefore, let me see, no, focus on the, you know, swam nasikagram, tip of the nose, sampreksya, means it will really cause headache. So, thank God, Shankara Bhagavad Pada's commentary is available here. What he says is that nasikagram sampreksya means, you know, keeping your eyes, isn't it, closed as though you are focusing on the tip of the nose. As though you are looking at the tip of the nose. For you to look, to seem to be looking at the tip of the nose, how you should sit? Without closing your eyes tightly, without keeping your eyes open, without turning here and there, you know, keep your eyes, if you look at the, you look in front of you, look down in front of you, then it will look as though you have closed your eyelids. You have not closed your eyelids totally, completely, but you are not keeping your eyelids open also. And when you see down, that's enough. Seeing down in front of you, the floor in front of you, is what actually will look like as though you are looking at the tip of the nose. You are not really asked to look at the tip of the nose. Okay? And here, you should remember one more thing. Is it very important? It's only an extraneous thing. It is not that definitely one should sit like that. See how you should sit, where you should sit, etc. Or really some certain things which are mentioned. What is important is, without it also you can do. Because just to avoid the unnecessary disturbances, he is giving this, prescribing these things. What it means is, don't be looking all over. Because in the same, toward the end of the fifth chapter, Krishna also says what? He also says, no, placing your attention or your mind, no, see between the eyebrows. Can we take then? Here the Krishna says, see between the eyebrows. And here Krishna says, see the tip of the nose. So there's a consistency in what Krishna says in the 5th chapter and what he says in 6th chapter are different. Therefore, what we understand from here, it is not compulsory that we should see like this or like that. What he says is, don't let your eyes drag your mind elsewhere. See that you take care of, that your senses do not take your attention from the object of meditation to something else. Because mind is already it's extroverted. The mind is ready to jump and go somewhere. It is not available for focusing here. The mind is ready to be scattered, to be diverted. Therefore, don't let your senses to be, to drag your attention. Understand? So, what are object of meditation? Which means, it's better to gently, softly close your eyelids. Or you can see down below. When you see down below, it will look as though you are looking at the tip of the nose. You are not literally asked to look at the tip of the nose. Is it clear? Don't forget this. In fact, same thing Krishna says in 5th chapter also. Sparshan kritva bahir bahyan. Sparshan kritva bahir bahyan. Chakshuschaivantare bhruvoh. Chakshuscha eva bhruvoh antare. Pranapano samo kritva nasabhyantara charino. There, Krishna includes one more this discipline of maintaining the rhythm of the inhalation and exhalation that he does not mention in the 6th chapter. Even though he does not mention the 6th chapter, we have to remember what he teaches in the previous chapter, bring that maintenance of the rhythmic breath. Rhythm in breathing is very important because, as I told you yesterday, the prana being associated with the kriya shakti, the thoughts being associated with jnana shakti, both being associated with the maya shakti, we say here, they're interconnected. Therefore, if there is if the prana is, the inhalation, exhalation are not slow and smooth and gentle, then definitely it will also contribute for mental agitation. It is very important. What he mentions there, in that context, he also talks about what? Bahyan sparshan bahihi kritva. Keeping the aside, keeping the external objects outside means what? Keeping the external objects outside means they do not physically walk into your mind, but they travel into your mind through your senses. Which means if the attention of the mind is not placed, if attention of the mind is taken away, withdrawn means the senses cannot perceive objects. Objects remain outside. That's what he means. So, without paying attention to the objects, turning the senses, withdrawing the attention of the mind, then what you should do? Also, specifically he says, now see between the eyebrows means, does not mean you should definitely see only between the eyebrows, or only should see the tip of the nose. Why one place Krishna says, focus, see between your eyebrows. Chakshuhu cha eva no bhruvoho antare. Krishna says towards the end of 5th chapter. In the 6th chapter, he says, see the tip of the nose. Nasika, swam nasika gram means, we have to remember one fact. Krishna himself does not emphasize, you see the tip of the nose or see between the eyebrows. No. What it means is, see that your eyes are closed. So that see that the eyes do not take the attention of the mind away. Okay? Better you can close your eyes. So Shankara Bhagavatpada writes his commentary saying, if you see down in front of you, keeping your eyelids half closed, it will look as though you have closed your eyes, but still you have not closed your eyes, but it will look as though you are looking at the tip of the nose. Okay? Don't give much importance. All that is important in meditation is withdrawal of the attention of the mind. The attention is scattered and diverted. And bring the attention together as one single pointed. Okay? That's the idea here. Okay. Then what happens when the attention of the mind is single pointed, not scattered, diverted, distracted, focused? Then when the attention is placed in the object of meditation, okay, prashanta atma. When you focus attention, how should your mind be? This person is already prashanta atma. The word prashanta atma means the tranquil minded. Already he is tranquil minded. Why? Because he is no more disturbed by the past experiences. Understand? He is not disturbed by the past experiences. A very important lesson. Prashanta Atma means that he is tranquil. It means he is not disturbed by the past experiences. Past experiences means what? Past experiences always contribute for, you know, entertainment of negative and positive things. See, always our experiences always help us learn. When they help us learn, then we grow through our learning. So the past experiences in our life, they will contribute for our learning, thereby our inner maturity, emotional maturity. Understanding the fact that nothing in the world, no accomplishment in the world will really, you know, will really give me happiness. That you learn is the biggest lesson. Even for one to be able to learn from one's own life's experiences, one must be intelligent person. Shastram says, only the person who lives a life of dharma, lives alert, conscious life, only such a person alone is sharp enough to learn from one's own life's experiences, thereby to discover dispassion. Shastram says, one must be highly sharp to discover dispassion. The people are not yet dispassionate means they are not adequately sharp. They are still dull. And for one to have that sharpness, to discover dispassion, what is dispassion? Understanding the limitations, that there is nothing in the world can give me what I want. Thereby, growing out of desire for things, they understand the limitations. If I to discover that, which means you have to aim for something more sublime, the knowledge, for that you must be sharp. To discover dispassion, you must be very intelligent. And that is maturity. For you to become mature, to have the status of being the mature person, to learn from your life's experiences, You must learn from your life's experiences. And to learn from life's experiences, you must be sharp. Otherwise, how many ever experiences you have also, you never learn from your experiences. Again and again you repeat the same mistakes. Why? Because you are not sharp. Shastram says, that's why, how living a life of dharma, living a life of values, contributes to our intellectual sharpness. That it helps you to learn from your life's experiences, understand the limitations, thereby to discover dispassion, which thereby your past experiences contributes for inner growth. There is a plus point, isn't it? And what is the minus point? The past experiences, you know, always leave scars in our mind. The pain, agony, frustration, jealousy, hatred, anger, you know, betrayal, lots of things in our mind. They're all in our subconscious mind, the past. Even if we want to forget, we are not able to forget. We don't want to remember them, but we are not able to forget them. They again and again they come. Especially when you're so preoccupied and busy in your day-to-day life, they do not come because there's no mind has no time. Mind has no time to pay attention to all those stuff. Therefore, they remain uncared, unnoticed. Therefore, they don't draw your attention. But what happens when the mind is not preoccupied, the mind is free, then all the old things surface and they really disturb you, agitations, isn't it? And then it is very, and then that's why you cannot forgive somebody. We cannot forgive other people because that person has done to me this, that person has done to me this. You cannot forget, you cannot forgive, and you all the time, the very sight of the person, the thought of the person, really creates so much of agony and anger and hate in you. How you feel, you feel. How you feel, very comfortable or what? So disturbed you are. And such things are there means, where is the question of being a Prashanta Atma? Isn't it? It's not possible. Therefore, such situations, how to be Prashanta Atma? Prashanta Atma means tranquil-minded, calm-minded. The one who has learned from one's life's experiences, discovered dispassion, thereby one who is a mature person. Not only that, when such negative emotions, which we can't help having those emotions, every human mind must have accumulated lots of such emotions in one's life's experiences. They're all sitting underneath your subconscious. They will surface and disturb you. They'll never let you remain peaceful. That is our own papa, isn't it? And this is where Shastram reminds us of the fact. Please remember, there is no such thing called a new fresh pain. Just because of this, the pain has come, we think. There's no new fresh pain. There's no fresh, new fresh anger. There's no new fresh jealousy. There's no new fresh hatred. They're all always old. Where are they? In your subconscious. Underneath, like our garages, all stored. They wait for the time. Something similar situation occurs, they trigger the old emotions, they surface. And we connect the emotions with the present also. This is where we have to understand all these situations, unbearable pain, intolerable pain, you know, intolerable, they have come, I am going through those situations. And when we should think always, they have been ordained by Bhagavan in the form of law and order, in conformity with my own past karma. Therefore, they have come, they are gifts from Bhagavan, and it is for my own spiritual growth, for my own emotional maturity, for me to become mature, for me to become a grown up mature person. Bhagavan has ordained those situations. Therefore, all the unpleasant situations, undesirable situations, unbearable pain, non-neutralizable, agony, hate emotion, negative emotions, they've been what? If you look at them as these situations, experiences are all ordained by Bhagavan in the form of law, in conformity with my own past karma, keeping this present, the people whom associating with as nimittam, instruments to trigger those things, their behavior only triggers what is already in me. They are not responsible, they only trigger their behavior, which seem very wrong now, that only triggers what is already in my subconscious. Therefore, those situations are ordained by Bhagavan in the form of law and order. They were prasada. For what? For my own inner growth, for my maturity. There is no way of my becoming mature and, emotionally, unless I go through such situations. When you understand this, you can manage your past problems. The one who has managed his past unforgettable, painful experiences, an Acha person is also a quiet person. He is called Prashanta Atma. So Prashanta Atma implies the meditator must be free from anything concerning regard in past. Otherwise, there is no way of your becoming a meditator. What about then Vigata Bhihi? Vigata Bhihi means the one from whom fear has gone. Fear has gone means what? That Vigata Bhihi, the one who is free from fear, means the one who is free from anxiety about the future. Which means the meditator must be the one who is free from anxiety regarding future, free from the past painful experiences, free from the thoughts of past painful experiences, isn't it? So past also does not disturb him, future also does not disturb him, therefore his mind is not agitated. His attention is totally available without disturbance for focusing. So, Prashanta Atma Vigata Bhihi. Free from fear means he is free from anxiety about the future. He is free from all the worries concerning the past situations. Therefore, he is tranquil-minded. Vigata Bhihi, Prashantatma, Vigata Bhihi. Brahmachari Vrate Sthitaha. Very important lesson. I'll tell you one thing, even if I take a few more minutes today, please bear with me, all of you. Brahmachari Vrate Sthitaha. See, Brahmachari literally means one who is a student of the Veda, one who goes to the Gurukulam after Upanayanam and studies the Veda Shastram in the Gurukulam is called a Brahmachari, the student of Veda. And here, any Brahmachari is supposed to live a life enjoined by the Veda, the Vedic way of life enjoined by the Shastram. The very word Brahma means not only the reality Brahman, the word Brahman also means Veda. So Brahmachari means one who lives a life enjoined by the Brahma, the Veda, is called Brahmachari. And the Veda prescribes the disciplines to be followed by a Brahmachari, a student, in order to be capable of absorbing the teaching. If the student has to absorb, understand the teaching effectively, his Shastra study has to be effective for him, and he has to definitely follow those disciplines prescribed by the Shastram. So those disciplines to be followed, prescribed by the Shastram, to be followed by a student, in order to be capable of understanding, absorbing the teaching, to make the study effective, those values together are called Brahmacharyam. Brahmacharyam means the disciplines to be followed by a Vedic student, to make his study effective. Brahmacharyam consists of values. And one of the values to be followed by the Brahmachari is, the relationship. What is the relationship? Any student should have, one of the disciplines to be followed by a student is that relationship. This sambandha. What should the student be associated with? What should he relate himself to? What relationship should he entertain, if you ask? There are only three aspects: Bhagavan, Shastram, the teacher. The student's relationship must be with Bhagavan, with the teacher, with the Shastram. And a symbol of these threefold relationships, which a student should have, he is asked to have a tuft here. He will shave the whole head, but only a small tuft will be left behind. You could have seen to a small tuft, wide tuft Brahmacharis have. That small, only few hair will be hanging like this, isn't it? Like a small tail. That symbolizes his relationship. He has no relationship with anybody else in the world. Because he will focused. Who is, what relationship should have? Bhagavan. He has to pray to Bhagavan, worship Bhagavan, invoking the grace of Bhagavan to bless him with all that he wants. Then he should relate to the teacher as a student. The teacher, relationship with the teacher is as a student, finished. Then Shastram, which means the student is not supposed to worry about the political problems, economic problems, what is happening with that. The student does not need to worry about, I am a father, my children are like this, I am a mother, I'm a woman, my husband is like this, my children are like this, everyone has to play so many roles. As a student, he has to play only student's role. He doesn't need to play the role of a father, role of a mother, role of anything. He doesn't need to, supposed to involve in politics also. Against ashrama dharma. He doesn't need to know anything. He's a student. Similarly, the meditator also should follow that. Here, sannyasi, in fact, one has to be before, even though you are a grihastha, even though you have the whole lot of jagat full of problems you have, when you sit for meditation temporarily, for a short while, you have to see yourself as a sannyasi before meditation. So, brahmachari vrate sthitaha means that time you forget, at least for a while, you have to remind yourself, now I am the meditator. I'm not a mother, I'm not a father, I'm not a teacher, I'm not any other husband, I'm not a person, no other role plays. Temporarily, when you're meditating, it is literally, you see that you withdraw yourself from all other role plays, at least for some time before your meditation. Your mind must, what should be in your mind? Shastram, Bhagavan. In fact, teacher also need not be there that time. Just the Shastram. Entertaining such a mind wherein one renounces all the role plays one regularly plays in one's life for a short while is called what? Remaining, in Brahmacharya Vratam. Not that remaining unmarried and all that here. Because this is entertaining that mind. Okay? The next line, very important, I'll see the next class tomorrow. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Tat Sat Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.